Have you heard all the like lectures that I've given you about how it's better to receive than to get, you know, and which they don't hear anything. One of mine admitted one day that when I speak these great, wonderful soliloquies, because that's all they are, it's all they hear is blah, 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 blah. And so he's sitting there and he says, I think the Porsche. I think it's the Porsche that I'd look good in. And I'm like, you know, good luck with that. And by the time you get there, because right now the big things in his life at that time was involved a screen, like a remote control and a screen. So there was no Porsche in his line of view. And I said to him, I hope when you get there, you don't want it, you know, really, by the time you get there. And so I did what I do, what we do. When I dropped off all these kids at school, I called my sister-in-law and I was like, well, you're not going to believe what happened this morning. That kid, he wanted you to blah, blah, blah. And she said to me, she has 7 kids. And so Holly, where's Holly? Where are you sitting? I know I was just looking at you, Philbin. Over here. Yeah. Cause, Wichita Falls peeps. Whoop, whoop. I called my sister-in-law, Chris, who married my brother, and she was my best friend since kindergarten, which is crazy that she married my brother, but despite that, she did. And she has 7 children, and clearly they did not teach much in the health class in Wichita Falls, Texas, because we did not know how anything worked. And so she has the golden child in her house, which is the first grandchild. Does anyone in here have the golden child? Oh, it's good. It's a good ride, isn't it, for that child? Because ours still does nothing wrong. He's a senior in college, and when he comes in the room, like, birds are singing around his, it's like Disney, and we're like, Johnny. And so that week, she had decided in their house that involves 9 bodies, that and it was his turn to take out the trash. She decided to let him, like, really take out the trash instead of her assisting. And his definition of taking out the trash was picking it out of the receptacle, tying it, and putting it by the back door. And so for a week, he did that. And that morning, it was Friday, she said that he literally crawled over a mountain of trash to get in his car. Not even, like, didn't dawn on him that maybe it would go, and I'm like, not Johnny, he did that? And so I came home for a minute thinking, something is not right in the world if this is the case. And I walked in my house, and every dish was out, literally. And every article of clothing that my then tween daughter had decided wasn't right for the day, it was as if we were in a forest and there were crumbs left on the floor to show where she had gone, because it was like, not that one, not that one, not that one. And so there were clothes everywhere, which, please tell me I'm not alone in that. Do you go in your daughter's rooms and there's clothes everywhere? Mine had said to me at one point, I like it this way. And I was like, no one likes it like this. And she goes, and by the way, my friends love it this way too. And I'm like, what? And our kids share. And I'm thinking, oh, your poor sister. And so I had a moment that day going, something isn't right. Our house is a wreck. My child thinks he wants a Porsche. And they're looking to me, like, looking to me to do it for them. Like, they expect me to do it. And then I'm sitting there going, I think I'm grooming them to look to me, like, to look to the state to serve them. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I'm grooming socialism, and I don't even believe in that, you know? And that's all it took. I became a mad mother that day, and it was over. Like, so over. And so if we go to the next slide, I feel like if there is an issue that is actually prevalent, it was prevalent in my house. I started to realize it's prevalent in our country, and if it is, then there's going to be a parody on it. And so this video is from Fred Armistead. Do y'all ever watch Portlandia? Please, does anybody? He's an SNL guy. So I'm just going to say it's slightly PG, only slightly PG. And it does have a little pause in it, but enjoy, and you'll see if it's a problem.
Foundation. And I was hoping you would sign this petition to help us ban plastic bags in Oregon.
I don't think I want to do that.
Oh, a skeptic, okay.
I think I need to read the appropriate literature before I sign anything.
Okay, here you go.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, how are you?
I'm Malcolm Singer.
Hi, I'm Chris.
How are you? That's our son, Alex. You just spoke to before.
Yeah. Could you just explain, help us to understand why you would shut the door on our son?
I'm the type that I have to read it first, have it right in my brain, and then I'll decide.
But he's the type, and we're the type, that needs instant answers.
That's unfortunate.
It's actually fortunate, because that's a way that a person learns.
You know what? Let's try it again.
Let's try it again.
For Alex's
sake.
Hello,
Alex.
Okay.
Nice to see you.
And what was the name of your organization?
The Surf Rider Foundation.
All right, son, you did.
That sounds convincing
to
me.
You did so good.
Yeah, have you read the literature, though, that you're...
Hey, listen. Literature is one of those things that everyone knows. One of those things you can look through. I think you're going to be fine as long as you know it. This kid's a good guy.
I'm sure he is.
And, you know, just sign the damn thing. Can I
close the door?
You're nice.
Thank you. Can I help you?
Hi. I'm from the Surf Rider Foundation.
My name is Alex.
Uh-huh. And I was hoping you would sign this petition to help us ban plastic bags in Oregon.
Tell me more. Just making sure you're smiling at him. Tell me more.
They cause pelican cancer.
They don't cause pelican cancer.
Who knows?
Does it say it in there?
They do.
Can you show me?
Shrug. And
that means what?
That means it's for you to decide. He's doing pretty good.
Well, not if he's telling people plastic bags cause pelican cancer.
Let's try this. Just move your mouth and I'll just do it for you.
Okay. So, well, you look pretty great. I mean, I think everybody looks pretty great. I mean, people in general, they're always looking good and they're trying their best. Anyway, well, hey, listen, just sign it and let's get out of here.
Get a life and stop smothering your child.
I failed.
No, you didn't.
Crazy people on the rule, that's all.
Hi, I understand that my son and his wife were here because you wouldn't sign my grandson's petition. And I was just wondering why you won't sign the petition. I feel like I haven't done my job if they can't convince you. They did a good job, didn't they? Just sign it.
Oh! Oh!
I think we should go to ice cream.
Ice cream.
Ice cream.
Ice cream.
Ice cream. Ice cream. Ice cream. Ice cream. Ice cream. Ice cream.
Pistachio.
Oh my goodness. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen that, and I laugh every time. And when they switched, like when they got rid of the plastic bags in Dallas, all I could think of was pelican cancer. I really was. Anyway, so if there's the issue. It's definitely prevalent. And what is involved in that video? What about the parents? What do you see about them? Why do you think they do it? Why do they do it? Why do we do it? Because we love our kids, really. You love your kids, and he's over there going, I failed, I failed. No, you didn't, no, you didn't. We're scared to let them fail, okay? We just don't want them to hurt. And then you have the grandparents doing the same thing, going, I just don't want them to fail. And then you have at the end a young man getting into a car seat. Because on the other side of that is not an adult, really. And that, to me, I sat there in the moment of that day where it all came crashing down and where I think, I don't know if my kids would go back and change that day if they could. Sometimes I think they would, but at the end of the day, I don't think they would because they actually are so much confident in the things that they can do that they might not have thought they could do. But I felt bad. Because as I started out of a game to change our house, and I methodically went down every room in our house that I figured that they didn't know how to function, like really function, like the kitchen that was behind me, did they know how to go to the grocery store? Did they know that a budget was involved? Did they know, where's Lucy? Did they know how much the groceries cost? You know, that it costs money and it takes preparation and someone prepares it and puts it on the table and all these kinds of things that I was like, no, 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 no. And I was like, well, they're gonna learn. And it was really in that first month that I started to apologize because I didn't realize what I was doing to them by taking it away from them, okay? So the next slide, if we could, I'm sorry. This is the who. Because for me, if there's a problem, it's like the who, what, when, where, and why. The who is us, you know? In our house that day, this was our room. That was the girls' room, which may not look messy to you, but it really made me mad because that was the bathroom. That was a cleaned up bathroom. And I'm like, what? And then these are made beds by my boys. And quite frankly, that's my bed, so I'm just saying, you know, that I am not setting the bar very high. But it's us. We race in everywhere. We go in and we finagle and we control and we bubble wrap and we do all these things because we love them, okay? And we are groomed to believe that's the way to love them. When they arrive in this world, I mean, we have like Safety Sam there with the especially great car seat because you don't want to walk out of the hospital without the right car seat. And then we are told to go make sure everything in your house is safe, you know? And so you fix all the plugs and you put the, did any of y'all do this? Do you remember? And you put the little things on the door so that you, on the cabinet so you can't even get in it, you know? And then you have people that come over and they'll judge you if yours aren't there, and they'll be like, oh, don't go to their house, it's not safe, you know? And which would totally be the case for me. I would never have been by anyone I know in the category of a helicopter parent, which is someone that hovers and flies in. In today's society, they've changed the term from helicopter to snowplow because we aren't even just hovering anymore. We're going before and making the road. But in our house, there were just too many. There were, and quite frankly, I was so happy, like if we went to the park, just to be out of my house and sitting by myself with nobody hugging on me, like doing this, I would take them around the playground equipment and I would say, because you know, there's like the big playground equipment with the ginormous, it looks like the Grand Canyon when you have that crevice that's probably this big from the drop off to get to the thing that you crawl down. And I would say to my toddler, if you're going to go up this, which your equipment's over there, but if you're going up this, by the way, if you step off this thing, it's going to hurt, so don't. And then I would go sit down because I was like a moment to myself. And I would listen to the mother sitting next to me gasping as mine would be teetering on the edge of falling off. And they'd be like, oh my gosh. And they're like, where's the mother? And then the friend would be like, oh no, it must be those nannies over there. They're talking to each other. And I'd be thinking, this is going to be so awkward when I leave, you know, because those are my children. And I'm sure they'll be calling CPS on me. And so it didn't dawn on me to go do that. I sort of figured if I could teach my dog to stay in the front yard, I could teach the kids to stay in the front yard. And so I did. And then I would open the door and they would play in the front yard. And I'm sure to the gasping horror of people that would drive down the street with little kids playing in the front yard without supervision. And so that was my lazy world. And it surprised me how much I was doing for these kids that I didn't realize I was doing. So that's the who. The what? What is it? It's enabling versus equipping. And those are two very, very different words, okay? Enabling is when you do something for someone that they could do themselves. And there are ages that they can do things themselves that we don't let them do things themselves. Equipping is when you train them and you teach them how to do it. You put the little tools in their backpack and you let them go. Is any of your teenagers in here, are any of you running along beside the bicycle if they happen to get on a bicycle? No, it would be so embarrassing. I mean, that would be awkward. And so we don't do that, but for all effect and purposes, that's what that family was doing for the young man trying to have a job, okay? The next slide, what do I have? Oh, okay, so here are a few of the headlines. If it's real, then it's out there, all right? This one on the right up here, that was in Colorado. An Easter egg hunt had to be canceled because the parents were racing in and making sure their kids got the right eggs. Isn't that sad? And the same time, there was one canceled in Mississippi because they just got to get the right eggs. The Time Magazine one was last year, and it was the cover of their magazine. And this is the problem. They have labeled the generation, it's Gen Y. They've labeled, which are the millennials, they've started to label them as the me generation. And Time went so far as to call it the me, me, me. And are we raising a generation of narcissists? And that word is a clinical word that means that you are so consumed with yourself and by yourself that you can think of nobody but yourself. And on the other side of that, there's no marriage because the marriage becomes about you. On the other side of that, there's no job unless you're the boss, and then you're good to go. And on the other side of that, there really aren't friends because the friends are there to serve you. And so for me as a mother and for John and I as parents, if you tell us that's what's on the other side of the coddling and the finagling and the manipulating, it's sort of like, well, thanks, no, thank you. You know, thanks, but no thanks. Because we really do love our kids. And we've sort of been duped to think that a child-centric form of raising a family at home is the right way. And that's where, as I started looking at this stuff, I'm like, oh my gosh, what's on the other side is bad. The next slide. Here are just a couple of headlines of what happens on the other side. This was CNN, how helicopter parents can ruin kids' job prospects. Michigan State University did a study a couple years ago from the people that are employers that come to their campus, and they just asked a couple of simple questions, one of them being, what's the parental involvement in the hiring process? And over half of them responded that the parents made the first communication with the company on behalf of their child. And then over a third maintained the communication between the child and the company. And over 5% of the people that responded said that the parent actually attended the interview, which it's a gasper, isn't it? But you sit there and it's like, well, why? Because I'm like, oh, that's disgusting. And then I wonder, are we just like this far off from seeing that being the norm? Okay, because things totally have moved. For people that have kids that are in college right now or that are young adults, it's like you may or may not be feeling this stuff. But for the kids that are coming up, it's getting more and more and more because we don't know how to stop being involved. And used to, education was a stopgap. The teacher would stop you, but we've kind of ripped that from them too. I mean, teachers can't even use a red pen anymore because the parents will be in there because it hurt their child's feelings. And so we see it even when your kid, think back to when your child was like 3 or 4 playing in the great leagues that we put them in, because we put them in the soccer league or lacrosse or whatever, because if we don't, then they won't know how to play, and then they'll be left out on the playground at the grade school. And if they aren't there, then they won't be on the pre-select team that's going to be leading to the junior high team. And if they're not on the junior high team, then they won't be on the high school team. And if they're not on the high school team, then they're going to be with the goth crowd. And then that's really bad because there is not a college for everybody, you know? And it's like, ah! And so we do it to do all this stuff. And then you have the coaches at the end of the season call all the kids up, you know? Can we go there for a minute? And I'm just going to tell you, my husband is one of these coaches that has done this, because that's the norm. You call everybody, all the kids up, and tell them how great they are. And so you have snarky little Timmy who's kicked and you know, bitten everybody the whole season. And they, you know, you call Timmy up, and it's like, oh, Timmy, you get the most spirited award, you know? And Timmy's like, yeah. And the other kids are like, he bit me. But the coach is sort of compelled to do that. And so you have this interesting relationship now of not really knowing what to do. Because employers have the same problem. Employers actually have divisions now. At Goldman Sachs, they have Bring Your Parent to Work Day. And because companies are not stupid, they're going to use it, you know? I think it was unnerving at the beginning, but it isn't anymore. College campuses have divisions that handle the parents because the parents are so involved on the college campuses. And it's like, yes, it was weird, but come on, because those are the people that are going to be funding everything. Is any of this tracking? It really is. It's the research that's out there right now. And it may or may not be jazzing with you, because in this room, I'm guessing there's a lot of high-achieving parents. I would guess that you have been groomed to be a high achiever, not in a bad way, but in a good way. And you probably are more apt to do this with your kids. And it's so important. It's so important to put as much on their plate as you can, age appropriately, so that they are compelled to go. The next slide. When and where? If this is, you know, it's not something that's new, this ideology. It really began in the 1900s with the existentialism movement in Western Europe, where we've kind of, it was this idea that we are our own God, that what we think is good, what you think is good. We're good, we're going to just respect each other, whether they're being just a right way or a wrong way. That did not take in this country until really recently. In the mid-1940s in the United States, there was a very popular pediatrician that wrote a book called, his name was Dr. Benjamin Spock, which I think if you ask your mom, she might know what that book was. It was very popular. He sold over 50 million copies. And his idea was a child-centric, self-esteem model of a family, which there are great things about that. And usually whenever we have issues, we tend to be on this side and then we swing really far the other way. So we had child labor laws come into existence in the 1920s for good reason, and it swung all the way over this way. So good luck finding your 14-year-old a job, because nobody can hire him because insurance won't let them. you know? And you had the word teenager didn't even come into existence until the early 30s because secondary education hadn't been a part of our life. So there's a lot of interesting things at play, because the truth is a teenager can do a lot. They should be out there. George Washington at 16 was surveying Culpeper County, Virginia, writing the maps that like we would use today, like the beginnings of them, without his mother. You know, and it's amazing. Abraham Lincoln on the Ohio River, alone, you know, and he survived. Another one I find so interesting, Will Rogers, he's from Oklahoma, and he, as a young teenager, was sent on the train to Chicago to sell their cows because they were ranchers in Oklahoma. As 14, okay, for a second, put your 14-year-old in that. Would you ever put your 14-year-old on a train taking care of your income, because those cows and selling them really was the family's income. And when he was up in Chicago, he saw somebody doing rope tricks at the stockyards. And interestingly enough, he really liked that, and he went home and started doing it. And there came really one of this country's great treasures from just that. And that was a kid, I'm just saying. And I sit there going, where's the disconnect? Where have we decided these kids can't do anything? I was at Tom Thumb, you know, and I was like, please, just let them back. Really, because I'll pay them. You don't have to pay them. Because the thought of like them putting the milk on some elderly woman's grapes and squishing them and her complaining to them, I'm like, I don't think I could pay enough for that. You know, it's like, let them know this is real. But they can't hire them. It starts at home with this interesting idea that we have of paving the road ahead of them. And it kind of comes with this concept of, I want my child to have it better than I did. Which is an interesting thing to think about, because what do we mean by better? You know, better really is the opportunities. Our country sort of changed the American dream from you come to this land for the opportunity to do something, and they've put in words like you're owed or you deserve. And those words are a little tough to handle, because we start to believe it. And when we believe we're owed or we deserve something, we don't do it. We wait for it to be given to us. Earned success versus learned helplessness. I know there are some readers in this room, and there's a great article that was in the Wall Street Journal by Arthur Brooks about what that does to the psyche of a person. Earned success puts fuel in the tank to do more. Learned helplessness actually does so much damage. And when you enable someone, that is learned helplessness, which is actually the exact opposite of what any of us want to do. It's worth a read. But here's the great news, because it does. It seems like we're down a road that's like we can't come back from. The truth of the matter is, culture doesn't change people. People change culture, okay? That is us. Do we want the tide to turn? Because it seems like it's going down a bad road. It changes in our home. Why do we have programs like the boys, like a Big Brother and Big Sister? Because it is proven that if you go in and change one person in a family, it changes the generations below. So if you get one kid out of that and they go to college or go to school, it changes everyone below them. And the same way this does too. And I'm telling you, these kids are crazy capable. They know more about technology than really all of us put together, I'm just saying. Except for the nice guy that was helping us back there this morning. He clearly knows everything about technology. But you put that with a capable kid that has been equipped to believe that they can, and therein goes great things for all of us, for them and for us. And that's exciting. The next slide talks about why we must stop ourselves. Okay, isn't that what it is? Oh no, why we can't stop ourselves. Time, is that, have you ever said that one? People say that to me all the time, and they think, they're like, well, you have time. And I'm like, I've got 5 kids that are really like mind-numbingly driving me crazy. We have no time to do anything. It makes it seem like it's going to take more time. Is that me? It probably was. Efficiency. Have you ever said that you can do it faster, that you can do it better? I can tell you, in one of these portions, like in one of the months, like even the beginning of the clutter control, I didn't realize that my cleaning up their room, which I did it for efficiency because I could do it better and I could do it faster, actually impeded them from cleaning up their room because they didn't know where the stuff would go. which sounds so ridiculous, but when your teenage daughter puts her own stuff away, she actually cares. And another thing, when all of the purchasing goes onto their plate, they take care of the stuff. Crazy. Because they weren't given it. Fear. I think we are afraid to let our children fail, quite frankly. There's an article, one of those articles that was up there, was written by a gal named Jess Leahy. She has a book that's coming out in August, and it's called, I think her book is called The Gift of Failure. I'm going to read this real quickly. This is an article that she wrote in The Atlantic that went viral enough to where she had a book deal off of it within a few weeks. She's a middle school teacher in the Northeast. This is her. 13 years ago, when I was a relatively new teacher, stumbling around my classroom on wobbly legs, I had to call a student's mother to inform her that I would be initiating disciplinary proceedings against her daughter for plagiarism, and that furthermore, her daughter would receive a 0 for the plagiarized paper. You can't do that. She didn't do anything wrong, the mother informed me, enraged. But she did. I was able to find entire paragraphs lifted off of the websites, I stammered. No, I mean, she didn't do it. I did. I wrote her paper. I don't remember what I said in response, but I'm fairly confident I had to take a moment to digest what I had just heard, you know? And what would I do anyway? Suspend the mother, keep her in for lunch detention, and make her write, "I will not write my daughter's papers," using articles plagiarized from the internet 100 times on the chalkboard? But in all fairness, the mother submitted a defense. Her daughter had been stressed out, and she did not want her to get sick or overwhelmed. Because we're afraid. What would happen on the other side of failure? A lot of great things, really and truly. If you want to look at failure, just Google that of successful people and their failure that has paved their road. It's crazy. You know, they love to read J.K. Rowling, or at least that was. I think kids still read that, don't they? She, oh my goodness, that gal, first of all, she was so down and out. If you don't know, she was homeless. And she wrote it on napkins, like the book on napkins. And she went to publishers and was turned down over 100 times. Which for me, I think it would take once, and I'd be like, I so knew I wasn't supposed to be doing that. Can you imagine the tenacity? But our kids read it and look at her, and they're like, oh, I so want to be that. But they don't realize the road that was paved with, oh, crazy failure. The lights that are lighting this room, Thomas Edison, over and over, failure, 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 failure. And it's like, it truly is a gift, because when they fall, if we let them, they learn how to get back up. And as they learn how to get back up, they use muscles, literally. Think about it as just a body. In the UK these days, they have started putting knee pads on their toddlers' knees, because you know that terrible period when your kid's running around and they fall, and then you get the raspberries, and then you have to take a bath, and it's so horrible. And well, they have put knee pads so that won't happen. And they have discovered now that it is ruining the ligaments in those children's legs, and they can't walk properly because the knee pads were put on there by caring parents who didn't want their children to hurt. And I'm just saying, in the same way, I know none of y'all did that, but we do that when we go ahead and do this, okay? It's the checking the homework in the backpack before it goes in, because you don't want them to be embarrassed because the kid next to them has a bad grade. Or the kid has the A because their parent checked. For me today, it's college applications. Because our 18-year-old, that's where we are. And I'm just going to tell you, we really have let him do it on his own, and I'm afraid there might be a little sinking going on. And I do, I struggle. I'm like, where's the balance of helping and not helping? But I know, and he knows, that the parents are doing the applications for most of his friends. And he knows that tutors have been hired to make sure that the essay is correct. And he knows, near, that all of the extracurricular all of it, we do it for the application. So even that, like all the volunteering that we do, we kind of ruin it when we make it about the application, because we've kind of taken the good part of volunteering, which is serving others, and made it about ourselves. Okay? And this is the world we live in that's weird. It's just kind of weird, you know? So, where am I up here? Why must we stop ourselves? Kids thrive on high expectations. You thrive on high expectations. Think back to like in your little sphere, who was your favorite teacher? Who was your favorite coach? Who's the best boss you've had? And I guarantee you, on the other side of that is someone that believed in you enough to put more on your plate than you could handle. Same with our kids. Really, training. It is really teaching, standing at a distance, and then getting the heck out of the way. It's so hard to do. Our homes act as societal test tubes. What you do here in your house, they're going to do there when they go out. It provides grounding. I left my phone at home with our littlest one because he was playing a game. And so that phone that they have, we never had. It is a handheld computer. And I know that it causes us a little sickness at times because we think of what they might see or what they might look at. To me, one of the biggest dangers of that thing is it defines who they are. And so for girls, you have the likes and the shares that are so crazy important. And they sort of decide whether they're okay by who they like. Yeah, how many likes? And they look at the pictures of everybody, and it instantly tells them if they were included or if they weren't included. There's so much going on with their psyches that's sort of almost 24/7, 365 days a year, because I know kids sleep with them under their pillows. That's a big deal right now in colleges, is sleep deprivation that is causing a lot of health concerns because the kids won't sleep. And a lot of it, they keep their phones under their pillows and wait for the text to make sure that they text back. I don't understand all of that. I really don't. I'm just saying I'm terrible. I'm technologically challenged, and then some. But this is a trend with them because they look at that to tell them who they are. And what a shame, because that's like waves in a sea. It's up, down, up, down, up, down. They want to belong is why they look at that. My kid, the 14-year-old that wanted the Porsche, why would he have wanted that? It would make him somebody. I mean, if you're driving a Porsche at 16, you are okay. If you're driving a Porsche at 45, you're okay. Why do we want that? Because it makes us feel okay. Not completely across the board, but I'm just saying, there's an element in that for kids. They just want to belong. And by the way, you've got a great house that they can belong in. And this is so much surprised me as we started down this experiment. I didn't realize what I was stealing from them by doing it for them. And I didn't realize that ridiculous little things could actually ground them, because our house wouldn't work if they weren't doing it. So if it was a dinner time and it was their turn to cook dinner and they didn't cook dinner, there would be no dinner. And therein lies the importance. You matter. You belong. We don't function right without you. It's an interesting thing. They really want to belong. Consider the attitudes that we're grooming. When we step in before, think of the kid, the adult in the car seat. The attitude that's being groomed on that is to expect to be served. It's dependence rather than independence. And again, I know that we all really want independence. Out of love and responsibility, it puts meat on the bones of, I know that you can do it. It's like the operative words should be, yes, you can, yes, you can. I feel like that's what I'm saying all the time. You can do it, yes, you can, yes, you can, yes, you can. And then they do it. They complain, and I'm just telling you, the whining has never stopped in my house, ever. But they step up and do it, even amidst the whining, and remind me that they can do it, because I get tempted to step in. If I have time, I'm going to tell you the story about the UT and the sprinklers, because y'all would really enjoy that. The next slide is how. How do we do it? Set up a plan. I really did talk to people that were on the other side. It's hard to, like, we are living it together. It's hard to see in the mud and the mire. But on the other side, I had a really wise lady that said to me, if you're going to change anything in your home, make sure that you involve them. You decide what it is. You have a meeting, okay? You set up a plan, something that's accomplishable. And then you involve them. Because if they aren't involved and if they don't own it, they won't do it. They'll do it for you, or they'll do it to avoid a consequence, but it's like you really want it to seep in. You got to get over the societal trends, because the culture is to race in and save. Really, it is. Begin with a family meeting, the kids' ownership, make it doable and not defeating. We have all different ages in our house, and the thing that surprised me is how much more they could do than I thought they could do. That surprised me. The consistency, I'm pathetic at it. And the incentive and the reward, which also, I'm just saying, I'm the worst. I never could do allowance because I would forget. Does anybody else forget? It's horrible. And then I would have no money, so I'd go take it from them. And then I would forget that I borrowed it, and then it was just a bit, I know, it's terrible. It really is. It's even worse when it's money that they've made themselves and I go borrow it. That's really bad. But for us, the incentive and reward, we needed that. We started clean. And so what I did, based on something that a friend had told me, because the key is don't walk the road alone, she had had someone in her sphere that had put a money job, a reward jar in her teenage daughter's homes, in their rooms. This one of her teenage daughters, she had caught what the straw that broke that camel's back was catching her daughter in her drawer stealing her underwear because she had no clean underwear. And she was like, this is so over, you are washing your underwear. And so she put a jar in it, $30 bills, one for each day. And every day that the kid did what they were supposed to do, they got to keep the dollar, which is actually a stock market theory that we are more incentivized to not lose than we are to gain, which I find fascinating. And I watched, in our house, I let the kids kind of choose how they were incentivized. There was one kid that wanted dollars put in his jar so that he could see it. Everybody else wanted to see the money and not have it taken. There was only one kid that really didn't step up. And I thought that was so interesting. He really didn't care whether he got a dollar. But those other kids really cared about losing something. So that, I found that fascinating. And in that sphere, whether you believe it's right or wrong to give your kids an allowance, we made sure that anything that they wanted, they purchased themselves. And then they did take care of it. We were at Michael's with one of the kids that wanted some of that model magic, like Play-Doh stuff. He looked through all, this was one day at Michael's, and what a kid's ownership of their life does. He was 8 years old, an 8-year-old. Goes into Michael's, wants the model magic. He's looking through the things, because you know, at any store, you have the sea of stuff. And then you have thankfully on the tags now, you get to see how much it costs per ounce. So that child had calculated out in his mind, because he had been at the grocery store and figured out the grocery store and buying everything. He looked at the cost per ounce, and all they had were these little bags. But there was an empty space where there was a big box. And that you got a lot for the price per ounce. And so he's like, where's the big box? And I'm sitting there going, well, if you want the big box, you got to go get help. And the man that was going to help him didn't look all that friendly. And he looked a tiny bit scary. And so I'm like, there's your person. If you want it, happy day, go get it. This little kid goes up to the guy, and he's like, could I possibly get the big box of Model Magic? He doesn't know. He takes this kid over with him to the register. They go through the computer themselves, figure out that there actually are big boxes of the Model Magic, and they're at the top. At Michael's, they have at the top, like these, the places where they store stuff, and they have this huge, ginormous ladder that every child salivates over when they see that ladder. And so this guy is so impressed that a kid has asked him a question without his mother asking it, and that he wants the big box because he wants to save his money and get the better deal. He sends that kid up the ladder to get the model magic off of the top of the ceiling up there. The kid comes down with it, and then he's checking out by himself with his own money, and the cash guy is like, oh my gosh, look at this kid, you're not gonna believe what happened, and I'm over like snapping pictures because it's like Norman Rockwell in my world. And then the kid gets in the back in the car, and he, you know what that's done for that child? Vroom, really and truly. Because now he's going, that was a mountain, that was an obstacle that didn't look good to me. And I did not want it. I did not think I could do that. I needed your help. You said no. And he wanted it enough to go get it. So that obstacle right there became an opportunity, okay? Instead of something that was going to thwart him. He gets in the car, and he's sitting in the back of the car, and he's looking at the receipt, and he goes, what's TAX? And I was like, well, here's a new lesson for you, because welcome to the world, And so in that moment was so much good going on. So when the next time the kid has a challenge, that's what he remembers, yes, I can. And he remembers how good it feels, because it feels good. It feels so much better than somebody ripping something from you and doing it for you. They can do it. These are the tasks that we did. If you're interested in seeing that, you can go on Amazon and just look at the table of contents of cleaning house. I think I have it on my blog somewhere. But for us, we started low with clutter and making beds, because quite frankly, somewhere along, I knew I had taught them how to do that, but somewhere they had forgotten, and clearly I had stepped in, or not. I mean, I don't think we did anything. We went to the kitchen. I wanted them to know what it was like to come up with a budget, to plan a meal, to cook it, to clean up afterwards. in my world, if you had asked me how I would have done it for them, there were enough of them to spread out the jobs the whole week. So like one day all you'd have to do is clean, another day all you'd have to do is cook. That's what I would have done. But in our family meeting, when I asked them how they wanted to do it, they each took a day. They wanted nothing. They wanted one day to do everything, and then they wanted to be free the rest of it. And I was like, okay. And so that's what they did. And I even gave them the option, because I hope like y'all possibly have sat in the driveway complaining over where we might go out to eat, which I just don't understand that. Like, really? And so I figured that they should have that option too, to enjoy the fact that no one can agree. And I told them that I would give them a certain amount of money in addition to the money they would get for being able to cook at home. And they would get that money. And if there was money over it that they needed, they had to use their own. One of my kids chose every week that he did not want to cook, and so he bought out everyone's meals. And it was terrible. It was a disaster in every way, shape, and form. Not only he went to Wendy's, thinking everyone likes Wendy's, and it was cute because he knew their orders, sort of, and he ordered it, you know, in the back seat, ordering it. And then he gets home, and he had ordered a hamburger for himself, plain and dry, and it came, and it had, like, mayonnaise and mustard and cheese and tomatoes and pickles. And my heart broke for the kid, as when everyone sat down and they were like, this smells, this is disgusting. And I felt so sorry for him. And at the end of that month too, he was so deflated, and my other kids weren't. And when the other kids cooked and put stuff on the table themselves, I watched them think about the other people that would be eating it, so they actually considered someone besides themselves. They set the table, you know, which I found interesting. They cleaned up, they did it all, and they never complained. When they were cooking for each other, no one complained about the meal, which I found so interesting. Never happens for me. They complain on anything I set in front of them. And they're just, it's like countless very interesting things that occurred. The great outdoors, yard work, I think our kids sometimes think that someone comes and mows the yard and that they will have someone come mow their yard. And the truth of the matter is, I doubt any of us in this room really could afford to live by yourself. We shared apartments. Who had money to have a yard person or a housekeeper? And so in this expectation, do you want them expecting that they will have to have someone come that they will pay? Or would you rather them know how to do it and that be a luxury if they can afford it? And we went on down. Working for a living, I made them all do resumes, and I made them go get references. We did it all. It was embarrassing. I do. And there would be my oldest, like, we would be outside. I remember being outside Office Depot one time, and there was a help wanted sign, and I was like, see right there? And he was like, do you see? Must be 18. And he and his friend one day sat in the back of the car and called every place of establishment that you could work in our area and informed me that 16 was the youngest age that you could work, but 18 was the norm. And how mean I actually was. And so I am the mean mom. I made them all plan a party, because they should know how to be hosts and hostesses. And that was really interesting, watching all the kids come. As they left our house, they were begging to be able to do it in their own house. This last year, last summer, our seventh grader decided to plan her own birthday party and bake her own cake and everything from scratch, every bit of it. And as I tried to help her, it was like the biggest stiff arm. And she did a scavenger hunt at North Park, because she paid for everything too, for her friends, which I thought was so interesting. I was not asking her to. She wanted to, because she liked how it made her feel, and she loved serving her friends. And here goes the key to the whole thing, and we can go to the next slide, because this is the why. There is a secret sauce in life that we are told in Scripture when the people walking around Christ say, what is the greatest commandment? What did he say? What did he say? They're the best words ever. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And in that is others, not you, others. Do you want to know the secret of life? Eyes off you. And I'm saying that to you because I love you, because I want it to go well for you. And it's like, what can we do to make this be the norm for them versus this? Because if they taste that, it tastes good. And you'll watch it play out in your home as you make them do these things, because on the other side of every laundry basket is somebody's clothes besides your own. And when you're putting your brother's laundry away and actually consider that he likes his underwear in this spot and his socks in this spot and his shirts in this spot, voom, it's a. And I watch my children whenever I'm really mean, making them do stuff. They can be so crabby in the moment, and as soon as they start genuinely doing something for somebody else, it's like life is brought into them. I find it bizarre. It isn't in just my house. I have had people from all over the country email me who did not believe it. And they will say, oh my gosh, my three-year-old was so crabby and horrible. I had him start helping me making dinner using a knife, you know, doing things that I didn't think he could do and he didn't think he could do. And on the other side, I look up and he's cleaning the whole kitchen. We do the same thing. It's a gift. So why should we do it? It's the message you're sending your kid. You can do it, you can't do it. Because when we step in and do it for them, that's the implied message. You can't do it. I can do it better. I can do it faster. I can do it. You might be able to do it, just not right now. Independence or dependence? Seeing obstacles or opportunities at these mountains that they will face, because they're going to face them every day. And it could be like the junior high, the middle school cafeteria. You know, that is a mountain, I'm just saying. But if they're groomed for the other, they might just see the kid at the cafeteria table that nobody's talking to and go sit with them for a minute instead of thinking that everybody's looking at them, seeing who they are sitting with. You know? Embracing the secret sauce of life. It's training other-centeredness. Other-centeredness abounds in your house every day in every task of everything you do. Really, it grounds them. Consider the alternative versus the potential, because the potential is exciting. I think we're kind of living the alternative, which is gross, because me generation, bleh. Changing one home can really affect a generation. It really can, and these are our homes, and I love this quote. Passion doesn't fuel work ethic. Work ethic fuels passion. What a great thing to give this to these capable kids. That's my spiel. Do y'all have any questions? Because it is 10:30. Yes. The UT, okay, it'll take 5 minutes. There is some good friends of ours we cross over, their youngest is the same age as our oldest. And the dad in that house, I swear he sits at work all day like thinking, what can I do to the kids this weekend? And he comes up with tasks and stuff for them to do in their backyard. And they're always age inappropriate. That involve saws and big, bad tools. And we've always looked at them kind of going, okay, bummed, because their kid could never play with our kid. And so their oldest, when he was 14 years old, they couldn't find a job. And this dad was like, he will be working this summer. But they couldn't find him a job. But he knew a crew that tapes and beds and does drywall. So he put his kid on a crew that tapes and beds and drywalls. No one spoke English on it. The mother was a little bit freaked out. So he got a friend to come along with him. And so for the entire summer, this 14-year-old did that. At the end of the summer, they come into their house, into their home, and they're sitting in their dining room. And it's a cottage. It's not like huge. This kid goes to St. Mark's with everything they own. I'm just saying, it's not like they are not comfortable by any stretch. They can't breathe every year they pay out that tuition, but it's important to them. And so they're looking in their little cottage, and the dad's sitting at the table, and he's like, that wall over there, I've never liked the door frame on that side. I really think it'd look better over there. Handle that. And the mother's sitting there going, because this is their dining room. And the kid's like, what? And he goes, yeah, tear down the wall. There may be electrical work in there, so you might want to pay attention to that. And put the door frame on the other side. And so this dad, you know, he means what he says. And so that weekend, the kid goes and gets a sledgehammer and tears down the wall and puts the door frame on the other side. And he learned how to do this, okay? So it wasn't horrible. And he drywalled and he taped and bedded and he... what do you call it? Textured it and painted it. And that wall is still in their house today. And it is not perfect by any stretch. But the kid did it. A 14-year-old did that. Okay? So they sit in the dining room every day and see that wall and know. So that's to me is like, whoa, so cool. Fast forward a couple of years. He's a senior. It's between his junior and senior year at St. Mark's. And his dad looks out into the yard, and he's like, and it's August, and he says, you know, we've always hand-watered this yard. It's about time we have a sprinkler system. And he was like, handle it. And the kid's sitting there going, excuse me? And because he had put the kid on a crew at camp the summer before learning how to do would you even call it landscaping? I think he mowed the yard at the camp. And so the dad's like, go over to Home Depot, meet the guys there, you YouTube everything, YouTube it, and get happy day, get on with it. And so the mother's like, you can't seriously be telling him to put a sprinkler system, he's 17, in our yard. And he's like, yeah, I am, he can do that. And so the kid goes to Home Depot, rents the equipment to dredge up the yard, and meets all the guys over there, because the dad is thinking the worst thing that could happen is he hits a water main and that would be expensive. Or he actually does it and it works, or he doesn't do it. Like, it doesn't work and they'd have to pay a crew anyway. So it's sort of a wash in his mind, but the potential good is great. And so he goes and he starts digging it up. It's August. He goes over to St. Mark's. He was on student council. He's completely filthy head to toe. They're like, what are you doing? I'm putting a sprinkler system in my house. No one believes it. The administration calls the mother and she's like, okay, he's lying. And she's like, no, he's not lying. And he wasn't lying. And at the end of that summer, after 3 weeks of doing that, they flip the switch and it came on. And it waters their yard to this day, which again, seriously, has anyone in this room put your own sprinkler system in? Who does that? A kid, have you done it? Unbelievable, you're the first ever, I love it. And now we all have this great respect for you. It's like, oh my gosh. And this is a kid doing, think of that, a 17-year-old. But every time they see the sprinklers, it's like it jazzes him, all right? The next year, he gets into UT, and he had played one season of football at St. Mark's, which his dad took him off the team. I think this is hilarious because he was afraid the kid was gonna get hurt. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he involves saws in everything you do. But he didn't like it. And so this kid goes to UT, and he calls his dad a week before school, and he said, I think I'm gonna try out for the football team. And the dad's like, no, you're not. No, you're not. And because you will actually really be hurt. Because kids are groomed for that team really since they're five. And so he's like, yeah, I am. No, you're not. Yes, I am. No, you're not. And the kid's like, yeah, I really think I am. And he said, if you do that, we will cut off every bit of funding we have for you. You will be on your own. And just know that we will not be supporting you in anything you do this point forward. And the kid is like, okay. Because here's what I find interesting. That didn't scare him. He had for years done things that he didn't think he could do. He had for years supported, had financial support that he had earned. It wasn't an obstacle to him. He wanted to try out. He wasn't afraid of the consequences, and he did. And as a freshman, he made that team as a wide receiver, which I find phenomenal, not being a truly groomed football player. Of course, the dad was very happy after that and got UT football everything. But interestingly enough, even after having done all that, he just didn't love UT, and it wasn't the best experience for him. He'd always wanted to be in the military, and so he signed up to try to get into the Naval Academy and got in. Which, that's where I'm saying, if you said to me, I would sort of be like, that would so never happen, you know? And for this kid, the what will happen on the other side did not matter. It was the trying. He didn't care. He was going to try. And I tell you, I had a moment of green envy when that dad was telling that story. Because I was like, oh, let that be our house. Anyway, yes, you can. Yes, they can. If you walk out of here with anything, just try a few things that you didn't think they could do and put it on their plate today. And then a little more. And then a little more. Anything else? Y'all are very nice to listen. Thank you.